I'm Lindsay.
And this is Kathy.
From Kindergarten Kiosk, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hey, today I'm talking with Allison Curley Townsend. She's Georgia's 2019 Teacher of the Year. Lots to talk about today. You're going to love it. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
You are listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a podcast for educators, helping you help kids achieve their dreams. And now here's Steve with this week's show.
Allison Curley Townsend, a third grade teacher at Barnwell Elementary School in Fulton County, is the 2019 Georgia Teacher of the Year. As Georgia Teacher of the Year, Townsend will serve as an advocate for public education in the state of Georgia. State School Superintendent Richard Woods, when asked about Allison, commented, "It is very clear to me that Allison Curley Townsend is a teacher who walks into her classroom every day with her focus in exactly the right place. What do these students in front of me need to learn, and how can I help them learn it? Then she brings all of her creativity, ingenuity, and skill to the fore to accomplish that goal." Townsend graduated from Clemson University in 2012 with a bachelor's degree in elementary education. Since then, she has taught pre-K, 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade students. As a teacher, Allison said she strives to give each child a voice in their learning and tries to inspire them to grow beyond engagement to ownership. Allison believes that all children start out as curious and excited learners and that her goal as an educator should be to nurture their passion for learning. Allison holds that her mission is to help students take ownership of their learning and to have an impact beyond the classroom. Townsend is also dedicated to having an impact on students and teachers beyond her own classroom and making her mark on education at the global level. From presenting at conferences to using Twitter as a window into her classroom, she has made connections with educators all over the world. Allison will now participate in the competitive selection process for the 2019 National Teacher of the Year. Please welcome Georgia's 2019 Teacher of the Year, Allison Curley Townsend. Say hi to everyone, Allison.
Hello, everybody.
Well, first of all, congratulations on being named Teacher of the Year for 2019 for Georgia. That is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited.
It's very cool. So let's talk about you for a minute. Do you come from a family of teachers or are you the only one? And where I'm going with this is, where'd your inspiration to teach come from?
Well, my parents are not teachers. My mom's a nurse and my dad works in finance. I do have an aunt who was a teacher. She started out as a teacher. But for me, I didn't always know that's what I wanted to do. It's kind of funny because when I was in high school, that's kind of what everyone was pushing me towards. I had a band director that told me to go into music education. I had an art teacher that told me to go into art education. And even my mom was saying that I should go into elementary education. But for some reason, I just didn't see that in myself yet. I don't know what they saw in me, but I didn't see it yet. And so when I went to college at Clemson, I actually started out as a graphic communications major because I was really into art and I thought that was kind of cool to be doing graphics. And it was part of the business college too, which I thought was neat. And so I kind of started out there and I liked it. But everything kind of changed after I went on a study abroad my sophomore year of college. I went to Brussels, Belgium, and this was the first time I'd ever been out of the country, and anybody who travels can probably relate to the fact that everything changes after you first discover your love for traveling and for the world, and everything just kind of changed for me there. And I decided that I kind of wanted to find what my purpose was and what I was going to contribute to the world. And so when I came back after sophomore year in Belgium, that's when I changed majors to elementary education. Finally, you know, mom was always right. And that's when I made the switch and I haven't looked back.
Excellent. Awesome. And that's so cool that there's kind of little adjustments along the way, I guess, is what's really neat how that happens. And so very cool. So let's talk a little bit about teaching now. What do you think is one of the biggest challenges that teachers face today?
So I think there's a lot of different challenges that are in education. Obviously, we are constantly talking about them, hearing about them. But one of the biggest ones that I think a lot of them actually stem from is misconception. I think in many ways, every adult is an expert in education because every adult, for the most part, went to school. But as we know, if we're in education now, school has changed so much from even when we were in school. So there's so much misconception surrounding what is actually going on. And so when that happens, there are parents, community members, politicians that all have these different ideas of what's actually happening in the schools. And that's when we start to experience different problems. It's like a breakdown in communication. So for me, I think as an educator, it's almost our duty to kind of combat these misconceptions that people are having by choosing to be more transparent, either in person by inviting our community, our politicians, parents into the classrooms to see what it actually looks like in the 21st century, or by reaching out online. We can have such a great audience and almost provide a window into the classroom so that we can all be on the same page.
That's awesome. You know, and I think, you know, one of the things we've got to get good at doing is telling what we do.
Yes, you know, definitely.
We got to put it out there. And too often we let others do that.
Yeah. Well, this podcast is a great start. So
I like that.
Yes.
So in the introduction, I shared this. I said, Allison believes that all children start out as curious and excited learners and that her goal as an educator should be to nurture their passion for learning. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Actually, when I first got a job in education, I kind of surprised myself because I actually went to Clemson for second through sixth grade. So that's what my certification was in South Carolina. But when I came to Georgia, I had my certification pre-K through eight, and it kind of opened up this big window for me. I never expected to teach early education, but my first job was actually in pre-K. And anyone who's worked with, you know, pre-kindergartners or kindergartners or even just has young kids know that these kids come to us curious and excited, sometimes a little too curious, that they're already excited when they come to us. So as teachers, I think it's important to kind of ask ourselves, can we say the same thing about our older students? And what's happening along the way that might be changing that love for learning that they had when they first came to us? So the misconception is that teachers inspire or start a love for learning in students, when actually I think teachers are nurturing or possibly rekindling something that was there all along in kids.
Yeah, that's so cool, because that's, you know, anybody who works with young kids, or like you said, if you have young kids, one of the things that happens a lot is you get asked a lot of questions. You know, it's like,
yes.
It's like, why?
Non-stop questions. I'm sure you can imagine what a classroom of 22 4-year-olds was like for me my first year teaching.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of curiosity. Engagement was not an issue to pre-K.
That's awesome. It's funny because both my kids are now grown, but I remember those years very well. And it's a neat sort of thing because they constantly keep you on your toes because they're asking and they're curious and they have this natural need to know stuff. And it's funny because I worked with, except for my own children, I worked with high schoolers as a teacher, mm-hmm. and then as an administrator and all this. I coached soccer for young kids, and I remember when I had 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds, and move forward, and it's very interesting because they ask everything from, you know, talking about something that's on the ground. Hey, check out this bug on the ground looking at things in the sky, and just gotta love it. So, very cool. So tell me, you know, one of the things I want to talk about now is, let's talk specifically about, offering some help, with classroom. So, you know, I often work with teachers who need some assistance in classroom management. What thoughts do you have for a classroom teacher who's looking for help?
Well, first of all, I do not claim to be an expert in classroom management. I don't know if anybody is. And probably the teachers that worked with me my first few years of teaching would laugh if they heard someone asking me this question. But I've made a lot of mistakes along the way, so I can provide some insight now, maybe. but my first few years when I started out teaching, I was big into like reward systems, and I even had something called Curly Cash that I had the kids use to purchase different things because of their good behavior and things like that. And for some reason, it didn't work so well my first couple of years. But then I actually read a book that was recommended to me by a teacher that I worked with, Daniel Hodge, called Punished by the Rewards, which is, you probably heard of it, by Alfie Kohn. And it really started to make me think about what we're doing and what we're telling kids when we're either punishing or rewarding them for a specific behavior. Even rewarding kids for something, you know, with some sort of external motivation is telling them that whatever it was that we wanted them to do wasn't worth them doing on their own in the first place. So it kind of got me thinking. And over the years, I took away the reward system, and I've definitely moved more towards getting better at building relationships with my kids, getting better at helping them understand the purpose behind everything we do. If they understand and believe in the purpose of why they're doing something, 9 times out of 10, they're going to do it. And then the last one is just really practicing procedures. A lot of times, behavior issues I've learned over the years that I've had come from kids just not necessarily knowing the expectations or not having the opportunity to practice them exactly right. So I got a lot better at this when I started teaching reading with Daily Five. One thing that they have us do at the beginning of the year is to build stamina with kids with whatever the expectation is, and also to spend a lot of time practicing the right and then the wrong and then the right way to do something. So no matter what it is you're teaching kids, how to clean up at the end of the day or how to begin, you know, reading independently, it's a great idea first couple, you know, weeks, even months sometimes of school, to have a student come up and demonstrate the right way to do it after you've gone over the purpose for it, and then have another kid come up and show the complete wrong way to do it. The kids will find it hilarious. And it seems funny at the time, but if you don't practice it, then they might be doing that anyway during your class time, which you don't want them doing. And then have that same kid who showed the wrong way then show the correct way to do whatever the task was. And by really practicing those expectations, those procedures at the beginning of the year, I've seen an improvement in classroom management for sure.
That's awesome. And I got to say, I got to go back to something you talked about, that the Alpha Kohn book is definitely something that will get your attention if in looking at what he talks about, what's wrong with using rewards, if they start getting used to that whole idea of, well, then I only do it if you give me the reward and stuff like that.
Exactly. And, exactly. You take the reward away, and then all of a sudden that behavior goes away as well.
Yeah. That's a great book for you to have started off with there. And you know, one of the things that I think is really strong about what you know, that you talked about is it's so important for those procedures to be in place, so they know what you're going to do.
And definitely. They want that too. The kids want some of that structure. They want excitement and fun things sometimes, but they want that daily structure that they know what the expectations are and what they're doing.
Excellent. Thank you for that. So let's go into you and your teaching for a minute. Do you have like a favorite hook for getting kids interested in your lesson, or the way you start off, something that you like to do that's one of your favorites?
Yeah. So as far as like teaching hooks, I think my favorite time to use those is at the very beginning of a PBL, a project-based learning unit that we're doing. And two things that I try to do when hooking kids is, first of all, I want it to be something that's relevant to the real world, something that they can kind of connect to and see why it's purposeful. But then also setting kids up to connect possibly with a larger audience down the road, whether that's other people in the school or even beyond, that kind of gets them excited. One of our fun hooks that I do every year, I have a math PBL that I do that's called the Winning the Lottery PBL. And so the idea behind this PBL is that I'm going to give every kid $1 million and they have to show me how they would spend it. And so they have to, you know, show how they would spend it on housing, you know, transportation, all these different things that they have to spend money on. And there's a lot of great math that goes into it. But the hook that I use for this at the beginning of the unit is I'll actually purchase a real lottery ticket. And unfortunately, it hasn't been a winning one yet, but I'll purchase a lottery ticket. And like one day before I introduce this, I'll like run out of the room pretending to be on my phone and get really excited. And I come back in and I I stop the kids, whatever they're doing, in the middle of whatever they were doing. They go, oh my gosh, guys, guess what? I just won the lottery. I just won millions and millions of dollars. I'm so excited. And they'll all cheer and we'll jump up and down. And I'll usually blast music for a little bit and we'll get really excited. And then I'll stop and I'll be like, well, what should I do with all this money now? And then that's when I tell them about how I'm going to give them each $1 million and that they'll have to learn how to, you know, show me that they can spend it responsibly so that they can earn that money, since, you know, they are minors and they have to prove that they can use that money the right way. And so they just have so much fun with it. And it's like this ongoing joke with my kids. For years, they'll come back to me and they'll spread rumors all around the school about how Miss Townsend is a millionaire and she has all this money and that they made all this money from being in my class. But we have a lot of fun with it.
That's awesome. That's especially because the younger kids, you know, I had a chance as a high school principal. I used to do presentations at some of my feeder elementary schools. And the first time I started to do this, I asked the principal, I said, what do they want to hear from a principal? Because they were doing career fair type thing. So that's what I decided that's they invited me over to start this. And she said they want to know three things. They want to know what you like about your job, what you don't like about your job, and how much money you make. So I think that's funny that you do that thing with $1 million, because literally when you tell them something like that, they go, wow, you must be a millionaire.
And it's like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They're so funny. But we have a good time with it.
That's awesome. So let's talk engagement for a minute, because sometimes, you know, a classroom teacher struggles to do this and to create engagement. So what advice would you give to a teacher who is struggling to create engaging lessons?
Thinking about that, I think it's interesting to kind of look back at teaching over time and where we've come from and where we're going to. Years ago, like thinking back to when we were in school, I don't think our teachers were too concerned about necessarily how to keep us engaged. Back then, it was more about compliance. It was more about how do I get kids to do what they need to do. And back at that time, that compliance was all about, I'm going to do this because my teacher told me to do it, so I'm going to do it. So then over the years, you know, about the time that I graduated college, it was all about engagement, which is great. I love it. I think it's awesome. But at the same time, I feel like engagement can be very external and it can also be very fleeting. So just keeping in mind that, yes, it's great to have fun and to hook kids and do that, but we can't stop just at engagement. I actually think it's more important to move more towards empowerment of kids. So if a teacher is struggling with engagement, I would actually say true engagement or empowerment comes from kids connecting with either the material or the people, having the relationships there, or like I've been talking about already, about having purpose or ownership of their learning, or relevance. How does this connect to the real world, or how is this going to connect to a real audience? So moving from that external engagement factor towards the empowerment, student ownership of helping them understand the bigger purpose behind it is usually a better fix than trying to find a short-term thing to do with them.
I love it. Awesome. Awesome advice. And you're so true, because a lot of that engagement actually is coming from when you get them involved in making decisions and being involved in what you're doing in the class.
Yes. Yeah. Honestly, I mean, even kids doing something as simple as coming up with their own questions about a topic, it's very simple. It doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles with it, but that will really hook them and engage them longer than some short little other thing that you come up with. It's not all about the song and dance.
I like that, because it really isn't, especially because you're going to run into the kids who really don't want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
So while we're talking about advice to teachers, I want to talk about this one. If you were talking with a teacher getting ready to meet her students for the first day of the new school year, what's one suggestion you would make?
So I think that the first day of school is so important. It really sets the tone for the year. And my first couple of years of teaching, the first day, pretty standard, was all about rules and procedures kind of thing. I think you walk into a classroom the first day of school, and most schools, you'll usually find a classroom doing that. But a couple of years ago, I read Teach Like a Pirate by Dave Burgess, and I was really taken with his ideas about the first days of school. which is funny because I just talked all about empowerment. Now I'm going to go back to engagement. I think that first day of school needs to be all about building relationships with kids and also just about celebration. My goal on the first day of school is to have the kids dying to come back. My goal is for them to go home to their parents or to whoever at home and just rave about their day and say, I want to be back. I want to go back. I'm so excited for tomorrow. So that first day is all about wanting to get them to come back. And in that book, Teach Like a Pirate, he talks a lot about how every child deserves to have the best teacher ever. And so just kind of thinking, what can you do to make your kids feel like you are the best teacher ever? Because you are the best teacher ever for that child. I mean, because you're their teacher. One thing I do that is kind of like our relationship building fun thing at the beginning of the year is we actually create a class music video together where I'll surprise them the first day of school because I will have rewritten the lyrics to a song that they know. And I'll surprise them with the song and then I'll tell them, you know, this week we're going to work on creating this music video together. And it's really fun and engaging, but the true purpose behind it is it's the best way for me to build relationships with kids and kind of get to know them in an authentic way that, we just have a really good time every year, and all year long they kind of look back on it. But it doesn't have to be a class music video. I mean, it could be something as simple. And I mean, in the book, he talks about just getting Play-Doh out. He's a high school teacher. He says he gets Play-Doh out on the first day of school with his high schoolers and has them create something that represents their summer, and they talk about it. Just something that's different, unexpected, and gets them talking, I think is great for that first day of school. Because once kids want to be there, then they'll be ready for the procedures and everything that needs to happen, of course, after that.
I love it. I mean, that's just the unexpected is a big deal with kids. And I love your thoughts about you want them to want to come back, because that's, you know, that's exactly it. You want them to just think you're the best teacher ever, and I can't wait to come back tomorrow. And so, you know, hopefully when they go home that night, what they're talking about is your class.
You know, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's really what you want. So that's good stuff. I like that advice. So let's shift back into your world specifically. During your bio, I noted that I said this: Townsend is also dedicated to having an impact on students and teachers beyond her own classroom and making her mark on education at the global level. Tell us why you see this as part of your mission and how it has materialized so far.
It's interesting you asked me that because it sounds very fancy when you say it that way, but it really genuinely did not start that way for me. My first couple years of teaching, I struggled like most teachers who are first starting out do. And I had never realized how isolating of a profession teaching can feel like. I mean, you're surrounded by people all day long, but I just felt so alone when I first started out. I was lucky enough. I worked at a school with an awesome administration, and my AP and my principal, they saw something in me and in my teaching, and they first encouraged me just to open up my classroom door to other teachers, which was terrifying, but it was good for me because it forced me to grow. So I, you know, welcomed those teachers in. And if I was going to have teachers in my classroom, I had to really know my stuff. I really had to make sure I was on it. And so that kind of started with that, just allowing teachers to come kind of observe me, which was really good. After that, my administration started saying, hey, you know what, we're going to start bringing our community into our school. We want, people from other schools or from the community to come see what we're doing here. And they wanted my classroom to be one of those that they walked into. And so again, I said, okay, that's terrifying, but let's do it. And so I invited them in and I grew a little bit more from having them. And then finally, after that, we kind of made the push towards not only having people come in face to face, but started using things like Twitter to actually show what was happening in our classrooms every day. And I just kept growing more and more every time my that circle kind of opened up more. And the cool thing was that it wasn't just me that was benefiting. The more people that either came into my classroom or interacted with us online, my students really started to realize that their work was not only was their work so important, but they were important because all these people were coming to see them and wanted to see what they were doing. I mean, that's honestly a great classroom management or engagement thing right there. If you're having a hard time with kids, if you get that public audience piece figured out, all of a sudden kids realize how important their work is. It's not, you know, constricted just to the four walls of the classroom. And so that's how it started. It actually kind of started more selfish for me in that I wanted to grow and I saw what this was doing for me and what it was doing for my students. But the more I started using Twitter and the more I started going to presentation or giving presentations at conferences, I just really was opened up to this whole community of educators that wanted to get better, wanted to grow, wanted to take risks. And it was just a total game changer for me as a teacher. So I highly recommend it to all teachers to try to open up their classroom, either in person to people or just to let social media be a little window into their world, because everyone's going to benefit you, your students, and the teachers and people that get to see into your classroom.
That's excellent. And, you know, it's interesting because just like you're saying, there's a connecting with people outside. I think sometimes when the kids see that through social media, that there's these good sources, there's good ways of using it. And and just being able to connect with other classes, other teachers, other people in other places that are sharing ideas. And it, you know, it's funny, just, you know, that's what I love about doing the podcast is that I get a chance to connect with people from all over. And, you know, some of them are people that I've listened to on their podcasts and I'm connecting with them. And you listen to and the different stuff that they're doing in their classrooms or working with kids or whatever it is they're working on books and such. And it's just, it makes the world so much smaller. And that's neat to be able to do that for kids as they see that this is pretty cool. I'm actually, you know, talking or I'm working with somebody or there are kids out beyond my space, you know, depending on where you are. Some kids have never been out beyond their community's area.
Oh yeah. And the best part is that it's free.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, it gives kids these opportunities that they would possibly never be able to have otherwise. I mean, I had kids where they were blogging about books that they had read in their book clubs that they came up with. And one of my girls' blogs was just so profound and just beautifully written and just so beyond what she would have done if it weren't on a blog format, that I actually like took the screenshot and the link and I tweeted it at the author of the book that she wrote about just to see, you know, maybe they'll respond or not. And it was the author of The Goldfish Boy. And she actually responded within a couple of hours and said, you know, how awesome the blog was, that she read it and it's inspired her. And I shared it with that child. And I mean, those experiences would never be possible without something like social media. So it's pretty cool what we can do with it.
It really is. It really is. Cause it's that, you know, when I was at that age in elementary school, that wouldn't happen. Not unless you picked on the phone.
No, me neither.
So very cool. So I recently heard you speak to a group of leaders. During this talk, you mentioned that one day you realized at some point that the kids weren't transferring skills. You were innovating, but the kids weren't. You said they weren't owning their learning. And we've heard you reference that a couple of times. What did you mean by that?
Yes. So this all started a couple of years ago. I decided I was going to go really big into project-based learning, and I'm still a huge advocate for PBL, so I'm not in any way dissing it. But the way that I was doing it wasn't as effective as I intended it to be. One project that always stands out to me, because I always thought I was just like pat myself on the back because I thought it was the greatest thing ever. It was our self-driving car project. And so the kids actually researched self-driving cars. And then they had to use everything they learned about angles and measurement to design a self-driving car testing facility on like large butcher paper. And then they actually coded spheros to drive the whole testing facility on their own. So they actually like put it to action. And it was so cool. And the kids had a lot of fun with it. And it just seemed like they were innovating. But the issue was after that project, I realized that they weren't transferring any of the skills, any of the problem solving or any of the skills that they learned in that project to the next project that we worked on. And I realized it was because I was the one that was doing the innovating, not the kids. They were honestly following my steps and it looked really cool, but it just wasn't enough. And so that was kind of what got me started moving away from just project-based learning units where I was designing them towards actually co-planning learning with kids and letting them own more of the process, because they had to learn those skills to transfer them between projects. At the end of the day, it's not just about doing a cool project. It's what can you learn from this that you'll apply to the next project and then in your real life as well.
It's interesting when we make that realization, because it's so easy sometimes, I think, to be working with the kids and you're doing all this stuff, and then all of a sudden, like a nice cold glass of water on you, you realize they're not really taking this with them. What's going on here? So, neat that you made that transition there. So during that talk that day with the leaders, your main focus for the talk was to share co-planning learning. Can you tell us a little bit about what this is and share some of the highlights with the audience, as well as why they'd want to know more about it?
Yeah. So like I said, co-planning learning is kind of based on my experience with PBL and at least how I was using it, not being very successful, and wanting to teach kids the transferable skills that would allow them to learn on their own. So I actually sat down with the personalized learning coach at my school, Daniel Hodge, and we developed this co-planning learning process that sounds very similar to everything that all good teachers are doing. But what I was trying to do was start to hand off those skills to the kids with each unit. So we use the same steps every unit. Starts with prior knowledge, goes to kids asking questions based on the standards. They find their own resources and share them. They create something based off what they learned. They present and critique, revise, and they reflect throughout. So those are kind of the steps that we came up with. But the innovative part, or the different part about this, is we use those same steps throughout the year for every single unit. But at the beginning of the year, it's a lot more of me modeling and very explicitly teaching them, okay, this is how we brainstorm what our prior knowledge is, and we can kind of group these ideas. Or, hey, let me show you how to come up with a good question. And I very explicitly teach them how to do a question formulation technique. But then the next time they do a different unit, of course, we're going through the same steps, but this time they don't need me to be as explicit about it. That, you know, I can start to hand at least one piece off. The following unit, we're going through the same steps, but this time they can take more and more of it on their own. By the end of the school year, they've internalized this learning process that we've used all year long. And no matter what they're learning, whether it's something in school or something that they're doing at home, they know, okay, I want to learn about something new. First, I need to think about my prior knowledge about it. Next, I need to start thinking of every question I possibly can on it. And by doing that, it's really empowering kids to own the learning process. And even though the content may be unfamiliar, it's letting them realize that the learning process or the thinking process is the same, and they know the steps to go through on their own.
So have you had any real, epiphanies while you've been using this strategy? Have you had any real epiphanies about this? I wish I'd known this long ago. I mean, just...
Yeah, I mean, it's in some ways I do, but I feel like I kind of had to go through, the struggle almost to figure this out. I think if I hadn't done it the wrong way first, I would have never seen the value in this. So it's been a process for me as well.
Very cool. What types of reactions do you get? I mean, I saw the reactions you got from all those were building administrators that day that were talking with you. What are kind of typical reactions you get when you talk with people about this?
Some people are really excited. I'll tell this about my kids. I teach third grade right now, and that's what I've been doing it with for the past 2 years, is third graders. And I'll have high school teachers coming up to me, or middle school teachers, saying, oh my gosh, if your 8-year-olds can do this, just imagine what my kids could do, you know. And it kind of gives them that freedom to say, you know what, I can start to hand this off to them. But then you also have people that think that different content area, it won't work with different content areas. Some people have a hard time thinking about how they would assess it or how it would meet the standards. But I think just when you take it into your own classroom and you use it the way that you need to, you might run into some of those issues and then you fix it. Like for me, the one that I had a hard time with at first was, how is this going to meet the standards? When I'm planning the PBLs, I can make sure it hits every standard exactly on. But if I'm having the kids develop it, how do I make sure it's where it needs to be? And that the epiphany came from, I'm going to have them come up with the questions based on the standards. I actually give my kids the standards that we're working on at the beginning of the unit, and they come up with their own questions. And then together, I kind of help guide them towards questions that will help, you know, guide the whole unit. And then sometimes they come up with really cool questions I would have never thought of, and it kind of takes it a new direction. But I get a lot of different reactions, as I'm sure you can imagine, to what co-planning learning with kids might be.
I can only imagine. And I can really hear some of the voices. Oh, well, you know, that sounds good for you, but I like the other one, which is what you just said a second ago, which is, if you can do it with third graders, I think I should be able to do this with high school kids. So,
well, and it scares some teachers, but one thing that I say is you don't have to overnight switch your whole classroom around to do that, or do the whole thing. I mean, even if you just take one little piece from it, that can be have a huge impact on your kids. So it just takes starting somewhere, and that's okay. Every teacher is in a different place, and every class, I understand, is totally different, and they'll need something different too.
Excellent. Well, thanks.
My way is not the only way.
No, it's a good way though. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
You know, we're kind of getting close to finishing, but first I have to ask this. Part of your mission as Teacher of the Year for the state of Georgia is to spread a message. If you were talking with principals, what would you really like them to take away from your talk?
Hopefully I've kind of conveyed this somewhat over our talk, but my message is definitely one of empowerment. So what I'm, you know, saying to students and teachers is just share your voice. So for students, that means helping them learn how to take ownership of their learning. And for teachers, that might mean helping them build a more transparent classroom. So if I'm addressing principals on this matter, I think it's really important for them to know that if they want their teachers to empower their students, it's important for them to empower their teachers and really trust them and invest in them, and know that, you know, empower your teachers, they'll empower their kids is really it.
I like that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Cause I think one of the things that, you know, in those talks, you know, kind of concentrating on the idea that if I was that principal sitting there, what's that one thing I want them to take away? I think that's a good thing for them to take away right there. So good stuff. The, especially having been a principal. What I'd like to do now is, you know, we got some people who are probably thinking, you know, I'd like to reach out to Allison. I'd like to ask her some questions. If a listener would like to reach out to you, what would be the best way?
So the best way I would say is just to reach out to my Teacher of the Year Gmail account. So it's 2019TOTY@gmail.com. So 2019 Teacher of the Year. And then another way could be, there's a Facebook page. It's just Georgia Teacher of the Year @GATeacher. Or the third way would be on Twitter. I just received my new account, so you're probably not going to see anything there yet, but it's coming. It's at 2019 GATOTY. But if you want to see my professional account that I've been using for the past couple of years, it's at @teach_Townsend.
Excellent. And I will have these in my show notes. So anybody who's listening right now, you don't have to remember all that stuff. All you got to do is go to my show notes, and I will have the different accounts for you to be able to get in touch with Allison, as well as through Twitter. So look for that information. So last two questions. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers who haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Well, luckily I do get to do this as my new role as Teacher of the Year. It's probably my favorite thing I get to do is talk to brand new teachers who have no idea what they're in for yet.
Yes.
But my biggest advice is just to find your tribe. No matter what school you go to, hopefully there's people there who are positive and excited. And those are really the people you want to reach out to and get to know. You want to stay away from teachers that might like to bash students or teachers or administration. That's only going to bring you down. So really finding those positive people. And that may be in person or it may be online. Like I've spoken about earlier today, I really found my PLC, my tribe on Twitter. And I really recommend for new teachers, if you're not on Twitter yet, I suggest you get on there, because that's where the positivity, the excitement, the risk-taking, that's where it's all stemming from. So that's my biggest advice to new teachers.
Excellent advice. And here's my last question. Do you have a teacher in your past who made a difference in your life? If given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
Yes, I do have a special teacher from my life. And it's funny you bring this up because I've actually been trying to find her recently. Haven't been successful yet, but I'm trying to find her to say thank you. But one thing that I don't think we've talked about yet is that in my childhood, I moved around a lot. I was born in Ohio. I lived in Texas, New Jersey, Illinois, New Jersey again, Florida. So I really moved around a lot. And in many ways, this was really good for me because it helped me, you know, adapt to different situations. But in other ways, it was really hard on me because I became really good at being invisible and just kind of trying to stay under everybody's radar. And I always expected people not to know who I was when I walked into a room. But it's interesting because when asked who my favorite teacher was growing up, I always knew that it was my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Vickner. And this was when I lived in New Jersey. And thinking back on why she was so great, it's not necessarily just her, you know, lessons or teaching or any of that, but it's the fact that even when I was trying my hardest to be invisible, I feel like she was the first teacher who really made me feel seen and made me feel heard and really got to know me. So that's kind of inspired my mission as a teacher in trying to make kids feel seen and heard and how important that is, even when they're trying not to be. So Mrs. Vickner, she's the teacher that did that for me. And so I thank her every day.
Excellent. And having been a kid who I can, I understand, I moved around a little bit myself or my family moved around quite a bit and went to multiple schools, and I became very good at being that invisible child also. Mm-hmm. And so when I teach formative assessment classes, I encourage teachers that's a big thing that formative assessment allows you to do, is to not let, you know, people, kids like me, like Stevie, be invisible.
Definitely. Suddenly you're there. That's so true. And some kids are so good. It's those good kids sitting in the back that you just would never know otherwise. That's a good point.
That's excellent. Good stuff. So thank you so much for sharing that story. That's awesome. And Allison, it's been great talking with you today. I love your message about empowering the kids working with and empowering teachers and working with them to understand, to get them involved in all that's going on in that classroom. And I wish you the best. This has got to be a unique year for you, because now you go from the classroom to delivering a message across the state, and hopefully that'll lead to some good national interaction as well.
Thank you. I'm very excited. Thank you so much for having me on here. It's a great conversation.
Good talking with you. Congratulations again, and have a great year.
Thank you so much.
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is excited to be a member of Voice Ed Radio. Voice Ed Radio. Your voice is right here. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is a proud member of the Education Podcast Network. Podcasts for educators, podcasts by educators. The opinions expressed on Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 are those of the guests and host. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is intended to share ideas, advice, and suggestions for classroom teachers and school administrators. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is produced for educational purposes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll share it with your friends.